You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila, delicious and smooth tequila, meaning harmony with the earth. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is a special remote recording. I happen to be in the All-Star Game week. I'm in Boston, right next to Fenway Park. I'm a baseball fan. I'm a beer fan, but we don't usually talk about baseball and beer on the show. But so I'm Jimmy Carbone. I'm the host here, Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. So we're out here at Plant Pub, a new pub with a plant-based vegan menu by a craft beer entrepreneur in the Fenway region of Boston. So you got me out here on the road checking this out. So we're going to introduce our guests. Pat, tell us a little bit about yourself, your full name, and a few words.
Yeah, Pat McCauley, born and raised in Boston. Have been an entrepreneur here in Boston since I finished up school. And yeah, Plant Pub is probably the first venture that really is kind of aligned with my two passions, which are plant-based food and craft beer.
Wow, that's amazing. Let's just do a backstory on you because you're an interesting guy. First, in terms of beer, you were part of a brewery in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Tell us about that because brewers are cool. And obviously, you're bringing the sensibility of a brewery. You know, it's kind of like open to all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to team up with a guy who is very well known here in Boston for craft beer, a guy by the name of Russ Heischner. I actually knew him my whole life, and he was the first ever brewer for Harpoon in the 80s. So if you know beer here in Boston, Harpoon is kind of the OG craft brewer here other than Sam Adams. He had gone from brewing there. He was in craft beer for many years after that. Then he got into alternative fuels and was applying his fermentation knowledge to alternative fuels for BP. And when he was done with that, he wanted to get back in the beer business, and I happened to just connect with him at the right time. And he kind of was looking for a young person that could do the media and the website and sort of the technical things that he wasn't good at. I was fortunate enough to join that project and learned all about beer from a real master of the craft.
So it was Barrel House Z.
You got it. Yeah, Barrel House Z in Weymouth. It's still open now in its fifth or sixth year now. And they just make great stuff. We started out doing barrel aged beers primarily. We found that was a little too niche, and we kind of opened things up, started doing IPAs, which we said would never do when we started. But I mean, that's what people want, and they're making great beer down there.
Well, this is pretty unusual. So I know this is a historic space, Beer Works in Boston across from Fenway. I've never been here. I've only just started spending some time in Boston. What does this place mean to you guys? So we'll talk more about the restaurant and the menu and all that, but just to locate it, I mean, we are across from Fenway Park and you are serving beer.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's a dream to have this space, you know. Definitely a lot of things had to come together for us to even be in the running for a space like this. It's, one of maybe four locations that are literally at the entrance of Fenway Park here on this side of the park. This had been Boston Beer Works for about 30 years, a staple for anybody who's ever been to a Red Sox game, knew Boston Beer Works. We're just super pumped to be kind of delivering what we feel to be a more modern pub experience.
I love pubs. It's they didn't have lunch today. I know it's the All-Star break, so there's not as much going on around Fenway, but there's staff coming in, it's getting set up, it's a big place, and there's a lot of energy here. So obviously you guys have a great operation. So back to you. So food and beer. Most people don't know how to define, you know, not eating meat. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your journey, because it is interesting. I mean, you've got a beer place, you're across from a brewery, and you're not serving any meat. So let's help us define what that is, and tell us about your podcast, too. I know you're a real advocate for another form of diet, but I will say, I'm looking at Pat, his eyes are clear, his skin's good, he looks in great shape, so maybe the answer for many of us, if we're beer drinkers, is maybe to eat less meat.
I would argue so. Yeah, I mean, this all started for me when I was at Barrel House Z. You know, I come from a sports background, I played college football, and sort of...
He looks like Julian Edelman.
Well, thank you. I was like 25 years old and just felt like, you know, I had always followed sort of the traditional athlete's diet of high protein and, you know, eggs for breakfast, chicken for lunch, steak for dinner sort of thing. And that sort of worked for a period of time and worked through my athletic days. But then I just found it really hard to look and feel the way I wanted. And, you know, it's kind of the definition of insanity to always try the same way of eating and living and not get the results you want or not feel the way you think you can feel. So I just remember finding this guy that I followed on social media. He was big into green smoothies and fruit and, you know, was vegetarian. And I thought that was absolutely crazy, but the guy was totally ripped and looked good in all this. And I just decided to try something new. And my sort of gateway drug, I always say, was switching out my eggs in the morning for a big green smoothie with a bunch of fruits and vegetables in it. And I had already eliminated cow's milk. I had already switched to like almond milk at the time because I felt like it was healthier. That was my gateway drug. I just felt so much better than the animal products in the morning. And then I just went on this experimental run of a few months where I really went whole food, plant-based. You know, I wasn't eating like Impossible Burgers and some of the things we serve here. I was truly eating, you know, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes, that sort of stuff. And long story short, over a 6-month period, not only did I kind of lose the extra football weight that I had on, not only did I feel so much better energy-wise, not only was I sleeping better, but all these health issues that I had since a little kid started going away. You know, I was a kid that used to bring my inhaler to football practice. I, you know, would carry an EpiPen around for allergies. I was never overweight. I was always a fit guy. So anytime I went to the doctors, they'd be like, you're doing great. Keep doing your thing. And when I sort of, you know, overcame all those things with a simple change to what I was putting in my body, I was just like shocked that nobody had ever presented me with that information. It was always like, you go to the doctor, here's what's wrong, here's the thing to manage what's wrong, but nobody ever said you can address what's causing it, right? So when I stumbled into that, it was kind of a profound thing for me. I kind of felt like I had been cheated or lied to by all the people I trusted in my life, you know, doctors, nutritionists that I had access to playing college sports and trainers and everybody. I was around people that knew, or at least thought they knew health. So I started doing my research and I found out all the things I know now about the nutrition science we have. And I very much believe it points to the power of, you know, 90% of your diet being plant-based, and you can really eliminate and even reverse many of the lifestyle diseases that we all face.
And we're going to drink beer too. Going way back in the 90s, I had a restaurant in East Village, Manhattan. And it wasn't necessarily by choice, but it didn't have meat. So it was fish, pastas, vegetables. And we got listed as a vegetarian restaurant in some cases. But at the time, I think that people assumed there was an ethos to it of like organic vegetarian and also like maybe not drinking. So for you, how has it evolved? Because I see a lot of plant-based. I know in New York and East Village, I saw some of the Matthew Kenny restaurants come through, and it's come a long way. And the term plant-based food, I get it, because I mostly eat plant-based. I eat whole grains, I eat vegetables, and, you know, I have some meat or fish every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different ballgame, pun intended here, next to Fenway Park, than it was just 10 years ago. I mean, I started doing this personally about 7 years ago. And even just over that period, like all these new plant-based products have come out. You know, there's a plant-based replacement for everything you can possibly think of now. whether it's a hot dog or a burger or chicken nuggets or literally anything. And it's become obviously popular and a buzzword, and but nobody's really, in my opinion, applied it in a way that is mainstream and approachable to the everyday man, if you will. Especially here in Boston, you know, you have like the health food concepts that, you know, if you're the average dude, like if you're the dude I was 10 years ago, like I'm not walking in there, like, or I'm not walking into a place with like a bunch of colors on the wall or Buddhas on the wall or anything. Like that wasn't approachable plant-based food to me. So, you know, I think what we're doing here is welcoming people into plant-based food, and beer is a big part of that, you know. And coming from beer, I know that tap rooms and breweries are places that just about everybody feels comfortable walking into, whether you're a 60-year-old guy after your construction shift or the 21-year-old looking to try the newest, hottest IPA. Like, it just has this way of bringing people together in a very approachable manner. And I think if you can do that in a way, the same way that breweries and tap rooms do, but just serve all plant-based pub food, that you can really shift people's perspective on what plant-based food is and maybe open their eyes up to, wow, like, you know, I can do this once a week, or I can do this a couple meals a week or whatever. And, you know, not only will it probably benefit my health, but it'll benefit, you know, the environment and the planet and all that good stuff too.
So let's go back to you getting Plant Pub started. I mean, you got some partners. Just take us down that road. It's interesting. You know, you're enthusiasts. You got into plant-based food, worked at a brewery, and now you've got this new project.
Yeah. Well, step one was when I left Barrel House D, I committed to trying to make this come to life because that's what I wanted to do. And we did a little pop-up concept. That's how we started down south of Boston in Quincy. It was under a different brand name and with a different group of people. But to me, we were there for about 3 months, a pop-up concept. And to me, that proved, and it was in even more of a blue-collar city than Boston. And to me, that proved that, you know, it would work. And the demand was there, and I wasn't crazy. And then from there, it took me a good year to find who my initial partner was, a guy named Sebastiano Cosia Castiglione. And he's one of the biggest plant-based investors in the world.
I won't ask you to say that again.
What's that?
I won't ask you to say his name again.
But he, you know, that's what he specializes in. He, you know, he started with a vegan winery in Tuscany. It's a famous Tuscan winery that he turned all vegan and organic and all that. And now he's one of the most well-known investors in plant-based food. He's behind Beyond Meat and a bunch of the big brands that are kind of household names now. And yeah, once I kind of had him and he believed in the concept, and he has hospitality background and loves doing hospitality projects, and we just hit it off and saw the same vision. And from there, we were able to get, you know, somebody of Chef Mary's talent level, because we had that team and we had the backing and we had the support. And then, you know, people took me seriously once I had him, right? Before that, it was just an idea. So when that came together, we could bring in the best of the best. And I met Mary through a LinkedIn message, and we met for a coffee. And I never thought in a million years she'd want to join a plant-based concept, but but here we are.
Well, let's talk through those early meetings with the menus and some of the foods that you develop, because sometimes when you think about it, you're talking about, you know, mass-produced meats is a mass-produced, you know, plant-based product. Is it any different or any worse?
Yeah.
I'm definitely interested in trying your Fenway Franks, because especially when you talk about hot dogs, people always think there's mystery meat or something. Mm-hmm. So just talk to those early meetings and how you guys evolved the menu. This isn't just, like you said, nuts and raw vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's plenty of, when people hear plant-based, right, they assume, like, it's health food, right? Most people that don't know anything about it. And, you know, there's plenty of juice bars and there's plenty of smoothie bars in Boston, right? And I highly suggest, if you're seeking health, that's what you should be eating most of the time. But, you know, we really want to appeal to people that, you know, don't know anything about health food and aren't health conscious at all. but they want to make maybe a better decision. We call it better. We're not saying we're health food by any means, but really what we wanted to do with the menu was, you know, make better versions for you of typical pub food. You know, when you go out to a pub, you're generally having burgers and pizzas and fries and that sort of thing. You know, it's not health food. Our version, we think, is better for you. And really, like, everything on the menu, like, we call chicken chicken. We don't even do apostrophe N, right? We call cheese cheese. We call burgers burgers. And really, we just want people to recognize what's on the menu, right? And from there, we're confident we can deliver a burger that will satisfy what you expect from a burger. So it's not, you know, we intentionally don't use anything people have never heard of. We don't use quinoa, or we don't use, like, things that your average person won't understand and be turned off by. So it's meant to be just totally understandable. It's supposed to be pub food. Like, just like you'd walk in anywhere and you'd order a pepperoni pizza, you order a pepperoni pizza here. It just happens to be made all from plants. So that was really the idea behind the menu. It's just totally approachable, recognizable. And then from there, if they have questions, we explain how we do things.
So you're really smart. You don't have to put up signs and notes on the menu say, these items are vegan. If everything's vegan, then you don't have to explain it, right?
Yeah, totally. And we don't even, the term you're using there, vegan, right? Like, we don't even use that. You won't see that anywhere. I personally am vegan, obviously. But again, there's all kinds of stereotypes and stigmas that come with that. And would rather use the term plant-based, again, from an approachability standpoint. And it just is more welcoming, in my opinion, than, you know, putting vegan everywhere.
Oh, that's great, man. This is a special place. Let's talk about the beer program and the drinks program, too, because you brought me out. You asked me if I wanted a drink, and I said vitamin C.
Yeah. Have you had vitamin C before?
I've had it a couple times in the Boston area. Other than that, I don't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So vitamin C opened up actually right next door to Barrel House Z. It's down in Weymouth, literally the next door neighbor. They opened like 2 years after us. In the same industrial park. And they had started, you know, brewing in a basement in Hull, Massachusetts, like on the water, this little, you know, seaside town south of here, and just slowly developed this crazy following for their New England IPAs. And they were just giving them out free to people, and then slowly worked up to opening a brewery. But in terms of beer, like, those are the people we try to support here, you know. The vitamin C's of the world, the Barrel House C's, you know, the small craft brewers that are, you know, around Boston. And then the ones we also love that are, you know, up in Maine or Vermont or, you know, New England, I think, has the best craft breweries in the country. And we just try to honor those, and we pick our favorite ones and the ones that started like us with a pop-up or started small and are people that really love the craft of it and love what they're doing. And over the years, I've developed a lot of great relationships in beer, like with vitamin C and those guys. And those are people we want to carry and celebrate because they're making the best beer around and they're local. And that's really the ethos of the entire beverage program, whether it's spirits or wine or anything.
Well, I'm really happy I came here. It's you're very authentic, and it feels like a great pub. You know, the last few years we've heard the demise of the pub, the demise of the beer bar, because everyone's going to, if they weren't interested in beer, they're going to breweries. And why did you feel like you could open a decent-sized pub as opposed to opening a brewery with it?
You know, I think beer here in Boston is... I think it's at the point now where there's so many good breweries. It's saturated, and I'd rather carry the best of the best than like try to, you know, create another brand that people have to become aware of and follow. Like, I'd rather almost leverage all the amazing brewers around here than to try and do it on our own. And then, yeah. So I just think there's a lot of good beer. I don't think like, what we do requires us to brew beer. You know, people mostly come here, yes, for the beer, but because, you know, it's different food wise. I just think there's a lot of good beer and we didn't have to go that route.
Well, that's encouraging and refreshing because I love a well-curated beer list in a restaurant, you know. So let's talk through your menu because it's really interesting. Right away, I saw a chicken fried sandwich, and I said, that looks pretty good, and Fenway Frank. What's the secret? Let's just go through the menu because I don't think we have to describe them. They're pretty cool. Yeah. So you got the Fenway Frank, easy sell, chicken fried sandwich. What are a few of the other menu items?
So we have a fried cauliflower. We call them fried cauliflower wings. Those are one of the most popular menu items. We do them buffalo style with a ranch dressing. We do a Korean barbecue with aioli dressing. Both unbelievably popular. Our Cambridge location, that's the top seller, along with the chicken sandwich. Then we have burgers that you can do a few different ways. We have just a classic burger that kind of tastes like, you know, a classic all-American cheeseburger. Then we have a barbecue guac burger that we do like our version of a barbecue pulled pork on and some guacamole on it. That's also very popular. Then we do a kimchi burger. It's like a burger with a little bit of a Asian flair to it. We have like a kimchi slaw on it. That's really nice. And you can choose two different ways. So we carry Impossible Burger, which we think is kind of the best burger replacement. But then we also have, if you're looking to be a little more healthy, we make our own in-house burger as well from, you know, black beans and rice and mushrooms, and that's more health forward. Then we have a number of pizzas, pepperoni, buffalo chicken, barbecue chicken. We use a brand for our cheese out of Brooklyn called Numu. And they make cheese from, it's a soy and sweet potato base. Of all the cheeses I've tried in the plant-based world, that melts the best, tastes the best. It looks like, to me, a real traditional pizza. So that's what we use in the cheese front. We got a couple other things like a chicken quesadilla. On the dessert side, we have fraps. In Boston, we call them fraps, not milkshakes. I don't know why that is. I think it's because there was a chain of Brigham's, if you remember Brigham's ice cream. That's a Boston thing. But they called them fraps. So we call them fraps. It's a Boston thing. You know, vanilla, chocolate, black and white frap. Then we have soft serve, which is also one of our top sellers at our Kendall, Cambridge location. We do vanilla chocolate. We do a swirl. So you can get like that traditional Dairy Queen looking swirl ice cream in a cone. And that's made out of oats. So we use an Oatly product, if you're familiar with the Oatly brand. And then we have a strawberry shortcake that we make in-house biscuits here. You know, dairy-free biscuits that are amazing. And then we get a sundae here as well, a s'more sundae. Yeah, I think that more or less covers. We have a bunch of other appetizers like fries. We have a mezze platter that we do like we make our own pita bread here with like hummus and some other dips.
So we don't really have to talk too much about the ingredients because this sounds like really good food, really good menu. And then when you started with your chef, just tell me again the name of your chef and like how did you decide that this chicken was the chicken you were going to use?
So
just because that's the thing I'd probably get, I'd be like chicken fried chicken, that texture, that flavor, I'd be happy to get it. I don't often always care what it is.
So our chef is Chef Mary Dumont, and she has been in restaurants her entire life, you know, 30 years. She's done just about everything: Iron Chef, Top Chef, Today Show. She was the first New Hampshire chef ever to be Food and Wine Best Chef. She's just done everything in her career. So she's super talented, number one, and that's where it starts. The reason I can sit here and say our food is kick ass is because of her and her ridiculous talent. On the chicken front, that we actually make ourselves. So we don't use a chicken product or like a Beyond or Impossible or anything like that. She actually takes tofu, believe it or not, and she does this, I don't know if it's overnight or how long she marinates it in a specific thing to get more of a chicken flavor to it. And then it's double battered with like oats and cornmeal and a certain flour. It's fried and it's just, again, it's our one of our most popular things on the menu. And then there's a slaw with it, like a ranch slaw on it and pickles. And it's just this big, hunky, meaty looking chicken sandwich, and people absolutely love it.
Well, let's talk about restaurants and bars in Boston. It's kind of neat here. I mean, there's bigger places. This is a 250-seat place. I feel like my experience in New York City, especially in like the East Village, everything's small, 30 seats, 40 seats. How do you run a place like this? Like, what's your structure? I mean, right now, I don't know how many people are here working, but there's this energy to it, and it's a great place.
Well, thank you, man. Yeah, first and foremost, like, we try to, you know, hospitality traditionally can be stressful. It can be unhealthy. And you know, from the second people walk in the door, we try to like promote a culture of like, we're about making food that's better for you and better for the world. Right. Like that's our mission. And we try to like carry that through to everybody that works here. Like, you know, health is first. And if you're struggling or, you know, having a hard time or stressed out, like what can we do to all as a team, like help that person out? And, you know, and I think that like carries on to when somebody walks in the door, you know, they're greeted by somebody that feels like they're a part of something, you know, that's good for them, and they enjoy showing up and all that good stuff. But I am not the expert whatsoever on running a big restaurant operation like this. We are fortunate to have an incredible general manager, actually, who hails from Brooklyn. Who recently moved to Boston within the past few years. And she's just fantastic. Again, like Chef Mary has been in restaurants for many, many years, and just knows how to run operations like this. I have no clue. So it's just fully a shout out to kind of the team and just the culture we try to, you know, make happen here.
No, it's a great operation. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
I'm Chava Periban, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainably managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
Hi, I'm Harry Rosenbloom from the Time for Lunch podcast, and one way that Heritage Radio Network has impacted me is it has given me the opportunity to sit down and talk with hundreds of people from all over the world and different cultures, and it is always eye-opening, the things that I learn and get to share on Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is home to transformative exchanges about food. We hope our diverse lineup of shows opens your eyes, educates, and empowers. Join us during our summer membership drive by donating and becoming a member. Members play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. Thank you for your support.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. You might get one of these really cool hats. HRN is pretty stylish, and some other swag. heritageradionetwork.org/donate. So I take a trip to Boston. I'm across from Fenway Park. Yes, I do like baseball, and it's All-Star break. So I got a chance to catch Pat McCauley at Plant Pub. And it's kind of a quiet week here because the Red Sox aren't playing. So we got a chance to catch up. So, Pat, we're talking about a lot of things. But, Pat, you have a podcast, which is kind of neat, too. So podcast to podcast. Tell us about that and part of your journey. You know, an athlete, he looks like a Julian Edelman, if you guys know the New England Patriots. And he switched over to a plant-based diet. And the thing is, we did talk about this earlier, that his journey was not about like becoming a Buddhist or something. It's kind of this new contemporary plant-based food, which to me sounds totally normal, and they're doing that. So let's talk about the podcast. And I'm sure part of your journey was doing this podcast, and just tell me like one really great person you talked to on your show.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So the podcast started really because, again, I was like shocked by my experience and what I was learning about nutrition science and why nobody I had never heard before that I could address what was causing my health issues, you know? So I started the podcast just to interview people that had similar experiences to me with food, you know, healing themselves with food or changing their life and how they felt with food. And yeah, I was just fascinated by it. I wanted to hear other stories, and I wanted to talk to experts that I had become aware of that have been, you know, studying nutrition and food's impact on disease and all that sort of stuff. And I always say my first ever episode was with my mom. So I interviewed my mom after she agreed to go 6 weeks plant-based with me, whole food plant-based. So we did 6 weeks. We walked together every day. It was, I think back, it was like a really fun time that we both had, you know, together. I'm one of eight kids. So like spending that amount of time alone with my mom was like a very rare thing. I never got that growing up. So, that was a fun thing in itself, but I interviewed her after, and, you know, sure enough, like she had a medication or two she was on that she no longer needed literally within 6 weeks. And just, you know, lost 15 pounds, was feeling better, which is changing her diet and a couple mile walk every day. It's not like we're doing CrossFit or anything. You know what I mean? That's how the podcast started. And then from there, it started with her, cause I didn't know anybody that ate plant-based or that had an experience with it. So I was like, all right, Ma, you're doing this. She was nice enough to do it.
So you had that alone time with your mom, one of eight kids. So did you ever ask her who her favorite child was?
I know better than that, not to ask that question. No, I mean, she would not answer that question, I'm sure, but you know, everybody, I mean, I don't know how my parents did it. Everybody has turned out, a-okay and are great, great human beings. I'm lucky.
No, you're awesome, man. So like, just going back to this plant-based diet, there's those books about the places in the world, like one's in Italy and one's in Japan, one's where people live to be 100, but it's always the same story. It's like they live in the country, they work at least tending gardens or plants. They're also usually walking up hillsides. Mm-hmm. And that also means they're eating like fresh picked vegetables.
Yeah. 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 I mean, yeah. So you're referring to Blue Zones, which is Dan Buettner's work on the pockets of the world where people live the longest. And yeah, one is Sardinia. One's Loma Linda, California. There's one in South America. Okinawa, Japan. Oh, we got a burger coming here.
Oh, let's talk about, hey, just tell us what you brought us, brother.
So right here we have our classic burger with an impossible patty and a side of fries. And for dipping sauce, we have our spicy aioli.
Also a New Yorker here.
Let's go Mets.
Mets fan. We got a
All right,
fan
brother.
Right across from Fenway here.
Take it easy, everybody.
But yeah, that's just a classic burger and fries. They must not have been ready on the hot dogs just yet today. But yeah, that's just classic burger. It, you know, it's right down the middle. It's what you'd expect from a burger and fries. Back to Blue Zones that you asked me about. There are five pockets of the world. They have the most centenarians of all places in the world. And yeah, one of the common threads is they eat 90 to 95% plant-based. But the other threads are also important, right? That they have really strong sense of community. They walk everywhere. You know, if you don't show up for Sunday church or the local farmer's market, you know, somebody comes knocking on your door, there's just a really strong, like, sense of belonging. And that's, I believe, is also a big piece of it. But One of the common things they all eat is legumes, beans, some form of beans. But, you know, meat is treated as a delicacy. You know, they have it once a week or, you know, for special occasions type thing, as opposed to like here in the U.S. in most places, it's the center of the plate. So in those places, it's mostly plant-based and they eat small amounts of meat. The other, go ahead.
A big part of that also, it seemed like in every place where people live to be 100, they also walk hills all the time.
Definitely, yeah. I know a lot of the places are hilly. And they, yeah, that's the other piece. Most places, they don't drive. They walk everywhere. So they're small communities where you walk to the grocery store or the farmer's market, or you walk to your friend's house. You know, they're a lot of them, like, there's very little cars. So they're always moving throughout the day. Again, they don't do CrossFit or like go to a spin class. It's just they are gardening, as you mentioned, or they're moving throughout the day. It's low impact, but they're getting their exercise. So it's kind of like, I think probably the sweet spot if like you want to live long.
For sure. Well, I love that you love craft beer because I feel like all these foods fit right in. I mean, honestly, a lot of times when I go to a pub, if I had French fries like this, it's almost all I want. I might have fries covered with. Do you have a loaded nachos? Do you have loaded fries?
We do. Yeah. So we do the fries a few different ways. So if you see that aioli that came with them, so depending on like when you order to go, we drizzle the aioli on it. But you can also do a queso fry. We make like a cashew queso that we drizzle over the fries, and then we do a chili queso fries as well. And we make like a impossible meat, bean, chili. That's awesome. And we dump that on the fries and it's delicious. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I know you can do a lot with beans. A friend of mine is a Filipino chef in New York, King Fajanagong. And he's got, he calls it like it's a black bean ragu where there's meat in it as well, but it's mostly the black beans and the way they're cooked. They come out like little small pieces and it does taste like a meat ragu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of things you can do with beans or like, I mean, even like we use things like aquafaba, which is like the kind of juice from like a can of chickpeas, it creates like almost like an egg white type thing that we'll use in like cocktails, or we'll even use it in baking. So there's all kinds of like these plant foods that can very much replicate like what you want to experience when you have, you know, a meat-like product.
You know, I have a friend, a musician, who maybe 10 years ago went plant-based based on his doctor's recommendation, but he embraced it and basically went, you know, found every cuisine from every culture that didn't have meat in it. And I was with a friend yesterday who just spent 2 years in Japan, and he was talking about some of the foods they have there, and he also doesn't eat meat. So he was talking about getting a corn on the cob, and you slice it so that corn comes off like a rib, where it's, you know what that is, and then it's like fried in a tempura. Tell me some experiences like that you've had in other places, because when I thought thinking about Japanese food, tempura vegetables, you know, I'm not missing meat in those cuisines.
Yeah, I would. I either go to, like, when I'm traveling or I'm looking for a place to eat, I definitely, like, go towards Mexican or Asian, you know? And, yeah, like a ramen or, like, any sort of, like, Asian noodle dish. Like, most of those you can, you know, if you ask for it without egg, you get all the same exact flavors and... especially Asian, they use tofu to begin with. And most Asian places have a tofu version of fried rice or whatever you're looking for. And then, Mexican is another one. You can always get tacos, you know, with black beans instead of, you know, chicken or whatever. You can always get a burrito and ask for it, you know, with tofu or whatever. I mean, you can even go to Chipotle and they got the sofritas, which is, you know, tofu that they marinate and everything, and you can get a huge burrito. And so it's a lot easier than people think. I tend to go Mexican or Asian cuisine when I'm traveling, and I don't really have anything I'm familiar with around.
Are you familiar with vegan barbecue? I actually do some barbecue events in New York, and I just met a woman, Chef Carrie from Pure Grit Barbecue, which is all vegan in New York City. She told me about her pulled pork. Do you know how to make a vegan pulled pork?
We make a vegan pulled pork here that we put on the barbecue guac burger. That's like our version of pulled pork. But also, we have carried intermittently when we can get it. There's a company out of the Carolinas called Barvecue that's similar to your friend there, makes all vegan barbecue. And they're actually like a couple of guys that were big into smoking meat. And then they changed their diet, I believe, for health reasons and are now big into plant-based food. But they missed their barbecue. So, again, they're taking, like, sweet potato and soy and all these different plants. And they're, like, they literally have a smokehouse facility. And they take all those products and they smoke it. And they get all those same flavors that we love from a roast pig or whatever. And they're making it plant-based. So, we've used some of their product over the past year in Cambridge and here. But we also make one ourselves that Chef Mary makes just from like a soy base that is kind of like thinly sliced. And then, I mean, most of the stuff, it comes down to like the marinade and how you cook it and all that.
You know, I've had things slow smoked where, you know, you let it go really slow, and even in the embers, whether it's onions, potatoes, sweet potatoes, beets. Beets, and I want to bring this to the ingredients now. For me, I guess I'm coming around to the idea that there are a lot of products that can be vegan or meat that are produced in larger quantities. But I'm at heart like a farm-to-chef fan just for my own personal home. I find a farm network, and I buy from farms. And there's nothing like the taste of a fresh onion, a fresh egg. It's an egg. I said egg and beets or something else. And you grow to love them. Like last winter, I was just getting beets from a farmer, and I never ate beets before regularly. And I got to have this whole winter of beets. I know it's different in a restaurant because you're dealing with larger quantities, but in your own personal life and on your podcast, do you have connections with certain farmers? Or is that a part of the experience that you're doing as well?
Yeah, I mean, here we definitely try to use as many local farmers as we can use for, you know, whether it's just the lettuce on the burger or the tomato or, you know, things that go in the salad or whatever. Like we definitely try to do that. It is challenging, as you said, when you're doing large quantities, especially like here. You know, we haven't even faced our first Red Sox game here yet. We will on Friday night, and it's a 10-day homestand. And so the night we opened, Zach Brown was playing at Fenway Park, and we got...
You just opened the other day?
We just opened on this past Friday. Yeah. Yeah, this location. This location. Yeah, yeah. So our opening night, Zach Brown was playing. So we had... Yeah.
So when I walked in, people were saying... They looked at me like, did I work here? Yeah. People were coming in saying, introducing themselves to each other. So this is really like a whole new crew.
A whole new crew, yeah. We had done some training, like probably, you know, 3-4 days last week leading up to that Friday. But this is a whole new crew, yeah. They're just a bunch of good people, you know what I mean? Again, super fortunate for that. But we got a taste on Friday, like what the crowds that Fenway Park brings, and it was just insanity in here. And we had people that... We're coming because it was an open, you know, these garage doors open in the front and you have thousands of people on the sidewalk. And it's just kind of, they see the taps and you can, like, you know, it's an open bar. Like, people are flooding in because we're one of four restaurants around Fenway Park that is right next to it. And, I had a guy, you know, there are hundreds of people in here, but I had a guy leaving that had a pepperoni pizza and like a few beers with his buddies. And I was like, thanks for coming. Like, you know, do you normally eat plant-based food? Like, I was trying to get some feedback from people. And this guy was from, like, New Hampshire, you know, kind of rural area. He was here to see some country music. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, you know, like, the pepperoni, like, we're fully plant-based. And he was like, he didn't understand what I was saying. He thought he just had a pepperoni pizza and a few IPAs, you know? So that's, like, really cool, like, into... answer one of like your original questions back when, like how excited I am about this, like because of the proximity to Fenway Park, like so many people that are walking in here have one, never heard of plant-based food, and two, have never tried it. So like the opportunity to kind of like show people how good it can be is like, I think, really, really cool.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you're definitely like defining this in a different way that I haven't seen. You're right. Other than at like some local small restaurant where they're making traditional cuisines. This guy, Matthew Kenny, I know of him from New York City. He was a well-known chef, and then he became a vegan and had plant-based restaurants. And actually where he had a few was where I lived for a long time in the East Village. How did you guys connect with him? Because, again, there's something bigger going on here. This isn't just a little shop in Cambridge anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So we were really fortunate. When he was looking at this space, him and his company were looking at this space for a plant-based concept, obviously, because that's what he does. And the landlord here is the same landlord as their Boston location of Double Zero, which is a plant-based pizza concept that's on Newbury Street. So he already kind of had an in with the landlord and had a relationship. And we were also looking at the space and we were, you know, getting a tour and they were getting a tour. And we realized we were both looking at it. We're the only, you know, plant-based concepts in town. And we also share Sebastiano is their primary investor. He's also ours. So we had a mutual connection. I had also had Matthew on my podcast, you know, a few months prior to us figuring this out. So we all kind of knew each other to begin with, and it's a small world in the plant-based food space. And, you know, I didn't want Matthew Kenny to do a, you know, plant-based beer concept next to Fenway Park because, like, we're Plant Pub. Like, we're the plant-based Boston concept, so that wouldn't have been good for us. At the same time, you know, they have 50-some-odd restaurants around the world and do so many different things, and they're like, oh, there's already this team here that's super passionate about what they do, like, and it just made sense to get together and do it together. And you know, like, something of this scale coming from like our small Cambridge location, like, would not have been possible without, you know, bringing on Matthew and his team. And yeah, so it's kind of like elevated us really, really quickly to be able to do something of this size and something this impactful. So and they're, you know, they're the leading plant-based restaurant group in the world for a reason. He's been doing it for 20 years now and is just so committed and aligned with our mission and our goals. And it was just, yeah, awesome to have them, like, want to back us to begin with.
No, this is a great place. It's very welcoming. And like I said, I'm eyeing this burger right now. We're going to eat it. But I want to go back to like this other thing about like foods. Like, when I love food, as you guys know, I love beer. And I love food. When I think about different, like, if you grew up Catholic, you probably had fish on Fridays. I heard the story of McDonald's. The reason they have the fish fillets, because in Cincinnati, there are a lot of Catholics, right? And they had to have fish. The franchises were dying on Fridays. And so I understand the impact of religion and culture on diet. My grandfather grew up in a small farm in the south of Italy. He was born in 1905. He always told the story of beans. When he came to America, he never wanted to eat a bean again, because when he was a kid, there were times and seasons when they only had dried beans. And if he was a little kid, says, I don't want any more beans, his father would say, go to bed until you want to eat your beans. So I'm sure, I know when people came to America and there was a lot of meat, it did change their diet. I have a friend, Louisa Shufia, who's her family was from Persia, and she really documented this in some of her books. Louisa Shafia is great. She talked about her father coming from Persia. Again, the same thing, from traditional diets, traditional foods, coming to America where, you know, there's steak in every supermarket. And of course, he put on weight, had diabetes. And it was through her going back and learning traditional cooking that she helped heal him. And so I understand it's like this dichotomy, you know, in America, we have access to things that no one in the world ever had. And traditionally, so we're trying to find a balance in our lives. But like one thing I know, like kosher in New York, especially the kosher food, there's certain rules. And I don't know if you had to do this when you retrofitted. So like, I know people that run like a kosher vegetarian diner. It's called B&H East Village. Been there forever. It's actually owned now by Egyptian Muslims, and his wife is a Polish Catholic. But it's still, the rabbi comes in and is certified. So when they had to renovate, they had to buy all new equipment because it's like treif. It's spoiled if it ever had touched anything else. Mm-hmm. Now, did you go through that when you took over this space? Can you use previous stoves and ovens, or did you have to start from scratch to kind of satisfy your ideals?
Yeah, I mean, we replaced all the kitchen equipment, to answer your question. And we are in the process of actually getting kosher certified, because most plant-based restaurants can very easily with some very small tweaks. This restaurant, although there were some equipment that was probably salvageable, it wasn't great, but we could have salvaged it. But I mean, it's been frying chicken, you know, for 30 years and cooking, you know, animal products for 30 years. And again, for like what we're trying to do and to be true to what we do, we felt it was right to get all new equipment and make sure that, you know, there wasn't that sort of stuff, you know, on the equipment from years and years of cooking animals.
It's like my wife, she's a tea drinker, doesn't drink coffee. If I put any coffee in one of her teacups, she'll know forever that it tastes like coffee, right?
Yeah, there's with coffee, sure. And then with like animal products too, it's like there's a fattiness, you know, like, you know, when you get the scrambled eggs from the local diner, you know, that just for some reason tastes a little bit better. It's that the years of grease and fat on the flat top, you know. We definitely, that was important to us to switch everything out.
So kids, I can't sneak bacon into my asparagus skillet anymore.
There you go.
I'll make a confession. I my first restaurant in the East Village in New York in the 90s, I lived in San Francisco when I was young, and it was my first exposure to vegetarian food. And I lived in the Mission of San Francisco in the 90s before it was expensive. But that was the first time I kind of lived mostly vegetarian. And in my first restaurant, actually, Muggsy's Cha-Cha in the East Village, I ended up choosing to not have any meat for practical reasons, that I had this very small restaurant, getting in a box of 40 pounds. And honestly, handling meat can be challenging if you're not doing a lot of volume. And getting the 40-pound case of chicken breast or something, in a couple of days, that stuff turns. Mm-hmm. So I kind of made the choice to not try to do everything. And I focused on fish because I had a fishmonger nearby and salads and pasta. And that was my first restaurant. We did really well. So I guess I'm just trying to talk about this in a way that I'm enlightened. Yeah. And I appreciate your approach, man, because I was a little put off when I first heard that Plant Pub, just like some of your baseball fans walking in the door, did not expect this. But this seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like, in again, to come back to, like, what we're doing, like, you know, we want everything to be approachable to anybody. And I think, like, with plant-based food, the man's man is who is turned off by it, you know, when you hear the term vegan or plant-based, right? The traditional kind of meat eater. Like, we don't have to convince your average female to come in and eat plant-based, you know, like we see it in Cambridge all the time. Like that's a shoe-in. But you know, there's no place that welcomes in the sports fan or the kind of man's man sort of person. And that's really like what we're trying to do, and just kind of to knock down the barrier and eliminate the stereotypes, and just like, you know, wherever you stand on the spectrum of healthy, not healthy, you know, carnivore, vegan, like whatever it is, like you can come here and find something you enjoy. Yes, it happens to be all plant-based, but, you know, we're not going to, you know, yell at you or, you know, that you need to eat vegan or you need to go plant-based or whatever. It's just like, you know, this is what we do. It's a fun, exciting, friendly environment. And your food, in my opinion, tastes better than any pub food you're going to get around here. And it's a great experience. And the Red Sox game's on the TV, and it checks all the boxes of what you expect and what you love about pubs. It's just done in a more what we feel is a more conscious manner.
So I don't even have to go to the Red Sox game. I could just come here.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe catch an inning, but you're not going to, you know, they're struggling this year anyway, so.
It's been a great show recording live at Plant Pub across from Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts. Big thanks to Pat McCauley, one of the co-founders at Plant Pub, for joining me on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone. I'm the host. Big thanks to our engineer, Armin Spengen, and producing intern, Alex Tran. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.